This Is Your Life, episode 55. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about something very near and dear to my heart, how to read a nonfiction book. Look, I believe reading is important. In fact, if you're a leader or want to grow your leadership, it's essential. I can't overemphasize this. Leaders read and readers lead. It's that simple. And today we're going to be talking about how to do it better, and I'll share with you 10 practices I use to make sure I get the most from my investment of time and money. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or take it to the next level, and you can find out more at platformuniversity.com. If you're already a member, be sure and check out the new member makeover that we posted earlier this week. And as usual, we had dozens of submissions, but we picked Brady Shearer from Edmonton, Alberta. And he has a great website at prochurchtools.com. And in the screencast, I review his platform, I focus on what he's doing right, which is, it turns out, plenty. And then I offer him 8 suggestions for making it better, and it'll help you make your platform better as well. But again, you can check us out at Platform University. Well, not too long ago, my wife Gail and I were having dinner with some close neighborhood friends. This is something we do once a week for whoever's in town, and if you can come, great. If you can't, no problem, but we love this group of people. And as we always do with this group, we soon began discussing the books we're reading. It's a very literary group, and we're always talking about what we're reading. Well, after a few minutes into the discussion, Gail asked this great question. She said, "So how do each of you read a book? What's your practice?" I thought it was a terrific conversation. We spent the next hour going around the table, each person sharing how they approached reading a book. And I was just fascinated by the variety and the depth of the answers, and I picked up several great tips for myself. But when it came time for me to share, I ticked off 3 or 4 things I found helpful. But since I've had time to think about it, I've come up with several additional items, and I want to share those with you in this episode. When I read a nonfiction book, I typically observe these 10 practices. Now, just a quick note, I don't read fiction this way. I don't read memoirs this way. I don't read other kinds of things like, you know, just articles and whatever this way necessarily. I'm talking specifically about nonfiction books. Number one, don't feel that you need to finish. Not to be cynical, but most books aren't worth finishing. And lest you think that's heresy, I've spent my entire life in book publishing as the CEO of one of the largest book publishing companies in the world. So I'm speaking as an insider, as someone who knows how the sausage is made, so to speak. But I read until I lose interest, then I move on to the next book. This is the secret, I think, to reading more, because so many people get hung up on finishing and they get stuck. You know, the book gets boring or whatever, and they feel like they've got to finish it to go on. So they just stop reading altogether. But I also listen carefully to what my friends recommend. And if they suggest a book, I'm much more likely to like it and to finish it. So a lot of the finishing is being careful what you read and picking the books that are most likely to be winners. And I'll have more to say about that in just a little bit. But don't feel any obligation to finish. Again, most books aren't worth finishing. In my view, it's the author's job to keep me interested and to keep me moving through the material. And if he doesn't do that, or if he starts to get redundant or repeat himself or lose focus, that's another thing that I just ran across this week. I was reading a book and the author just completely lost focus and started writing about another topic. Well, I put it down and I don't intend to pick it back up. So don't feel that you need to finish. Practice number two, start with the author bio. You know, every book flows out of an author's heart and mind, and I want to know something about the person I'm going to be spending the next several hours with. I mean, doesn't that make sense? Usually the bio in the book is enough, But often I'll Google the author. I'll see if they have a website. At the very least, I'll look on Wikipedia, but I'll read the notes in the book itself and find out any other leads I can find, because again, I want to know them as a person and a little bit about their motivations, what they do professionally, why they wrote this book, all the rest of it. So start with the author bio. Third practice, read the table of contents. You know, I learn best, and I'll bet you do too, when I understand the context. And so I look at the contents just like I look at a map before I go on a trip. I want to know where we're starting, where we're going, and how we're going to get there. And by the way, a note to authors, if you're a writer, I especially like annotated tables of contents that give me more than just the chapter titles. This is an unbelievable, often wasted opportunity to sell your book. You know, you think, well, I've already sold the book by the time they look at the table of contents. I can tell you from research we did when I was at Thomas Nelson that when people have the opportunity to pick up a book on a shelf at a conventional bookstore, they first look at the cover, then they look at the back cover, they look at the flaps, and then fourth, they look at the table of contents. If the table of contents doesn't sell them that the book is relevant, that it's compelling, that it's going to be covering the subjects that they expect, they put it back on the shelf. So this is a great opportunity, a necessary opportunity for you to continue to sell the book. And again, as a reader, it just gives me a sense of context what the book is going to be about. So that's my third practice, read the table of contents. Practice number four, quickly scan the whole book. Now, I'm not talking about speed reading, but I like to do a quick flyover to sample the author's writing. And I notice, for example, how long the chapters are and how they're structured. And I might read a few pull quotes, you know, where they take some pithy quote and they make it bigger on the page. I look at the subheads. I note the use of lists, diagrams, block quotes. By the way, again, this is stuff that's not usually found in novels, but I'm talking about nonfiction books. But I'm trying to set my expectations for what is ahead. I'll do better if I know what's ahead. Again, it's about context for me. So number four, quickly scan the whole book. Practice number five, highlight important passages. I cannot read a nonfiction book without a highlighter. And on the Kindle, I use the built-in highlighter function, which I love because I just have to touch it with my finger, drag my finger, and the text that I've drug over is highlighted. Now, I prefer yellow, though I've been known to use pink in a pinch. And the cool thing about the Kindle now is you can pick whatever color you want. You can even change colors. I don't have any, you know, fancy schmancy kind of system for having colors mean something. Maybe I should, but I don't. But I highlight, get this, anything that resonates with me in some way. Again, it's not very scientific, but I just highlight what resonates with me so that when I'm going back over the book later, if I choose to do that, then the passages that meant something to me when I read it will stand out and I'll be more likely to catch them and not miss them. But the better the book, the more I highlight. I can tell you there are some books that I've read that are almost all highlighted. In fact, the parts that weren't highlighted take up less space than the parts that I highlighted. Now, in the old days of paper, you know, like 2 years ago or so, I kept lots of highlighters handy in my desk and in my briefcase. I bought them by the box and I used them up like crazy. But now, since I read almost everything digitally, I just use the built-in highlighting system, which is terrific. Practice number six, take notes in the front or in the margins. And again, on a Kindle, I just take a note right there in the text itself. I just highlight the text and click on the note-taking function and take my note right there. But I used to take notes in the front of the book, so I had a convenient summary of what I had read. And I also like to write in the margins of traditional books. So my wife, Gail, has a written conversation with the author and fills the margins almost completely. I mean, her books, honestly, I've tried to read them or she's tried to share them with me. They're totally unreadable after she's done with them because she's got stuff underlined. She doesn't highlight, by the way, she underlines. And then she has all these notes in the margins and it's just a mess. And for me, it's very distracting. But it shows you that she really processes that content and she does it kind of in the form of a conversation. And I think it's a terrific practice that many people find helpful. You know, interestingly though, I rarely go back and reread my notes. They simply help me think while I'm reading. And that's what I'm really looking for. Not so much the ability to regurgitate what I've read in the form that I've read it, but I want it to interact with my own thinking and shape my thinking so that I think differently after I've read that book than before I read it. So practice number six, take notes in the front or in the margins. Practice number 7, use a set of note-taking symbols. Now, I use the same set of symbols I use when I'm taking notes in Evernote or when I'm taking notes in a conventional journal. But if an item is particularly important or insightful, I put a star next to it. If an item requires further research or resolution, I put a question mark next to it. By the way, in Evernote, I put 2 question marks in a row. If an item requires an action on my part or a follow-up, I put a ballot box, like an open square next to it, and then when the item is completed, I can check it off. So it's just, you know, you may have a different set of symbols, but it's a great way, again, to find what you're looking for quickly, because I'm doing that at the end of the reading process. I don't usually go back weeks later or months later, but usually at the end of the reading, I go back and I review my notes and my note-taking symbols if I've left any of those in the book. Practice number 8, dog ear, or digitally, bookmark the pages you want to revisit. I bookmark the really, really important passages by folding down the corner of the page. Now, I obviously don't do that digitally. I just use the bookmark feature in Kindle, but I do this all the time on the physical books, and I used to do it a lot. I had a friend who regarded books as so sacred, he wouldn't even break the binding. You know, he would not fully open the book because he didn't want to break the back of the book, and he would never dog-ear the book. And I never wanted to borrow a book from him because he expected it to be returned in that kind of pristine condition. And in my view, books are made to be consumed, to be interacted with, to be chewed up, to be swallowed, to be spit out, whatever, but interact with them. And so don't be afraid to put a bookmark or to turn down the corner of the page. And by the way, these are usually passages with a quote that I want to use in my writing or speaking. So it's something I want to be able to get back to later. Those are the things that I typically bookmark. For me, they have more prominence, more importance than a simple highlight or a note that I take. Practice number 9, review the book and transfer actions to my to-do list. Now, when I finished a book, again, a nonfiction book, I go back and I do a quick scan. As I mentioned above, I don't pay much attention to my notes unless they have one of the 3 key symbols on the page or if the page is dog-eared. If there's an action I need to take, I put it on my to-do list, or in my case, Noseby, since that's the task manager that I use, with a reference to the book title and the page. So review the book. It doesn't take long. I literally do this probably in 10 minutes, but to review it and transfer the actions to my to-do list. Practice number 10, share the book's message. As Thomas Nelson says on its booksneeze.com site, which by the way is a terrific site if you're a blogger, a way for you to get free books, but it says, and this is the slogan, great books are contagious. They're meant to be shared. So if it's a book I've really loved, I blog about it, or I might do a mini post on my blog where I just mention it. It may not be a full-blown review or a book giveaway, but I just mention it. I love to share good books with other people because I think books can be so transformative. But I blog about them, I teach about them, I buy multiple copies to give away to friends and colleagues. And this is one way, from my perspective, to ensure that the message lives on and is passed on. And so often when I start a book, a really great book, I know it's a really great book, if I'm saying to myself, oh my gosh, I've got to get a copy for so-and-so, or I got to get a copy for these people, or I got to get my staff to read it. If I start thinking that spontaneously, that's a good sign that I'm reading a great book. So as I said at the beginning of this episode, reading is really, really important to your own growth and leadership. And you may say to yourself, but I'm not a reader. And I would just challenge you. That may be a story you're telling yourself, or maybe it's been because you've been unable to finish books in the past. But if you're going to grow in your personal growth and in your leadership, you've got to find time to read. It's the primary way I stimulate my mind to generate as much content as I put out. And I really think it's had more to do with the success of my career than any other single factor. So if you're convinced, then be intentional. You really can get better at reading. You really can retain more of what you read with these 10 practices. And with that, let's get to some listener questions. We had a ton this time, but I've narrowed it down, I think. The first one comes from Andrew.
Hey there, Michael. This is Andrew Mason from Delaware. I run a website where I learn from leaders at proguide.io. My question is, I've been reading a ton of nonfiction and leadership books here recently, and actually one of my mentors has suggested that I put the brakes on it until I learn how to process all this information I'm taking in. I didn't know if you happen to have any suggestions on how to process or get this information through step by step so you retain all the stuff that you're learning. Love the show, and love to hear back from you.
Andrew, this is a great question. In fact, I've written a post on my blog called How to Retain More of What You Read. And it's a practice that I learned when I was running my mentoring group from radicalmentoring.com. But they lay out a process called a book net out, where you actually summarize the book in one page. It's a great process. I outline that process in that post, and I even provide a template that you can use. Now, having said that, let me just take a little bit of issue with your mentor. I think sometimes people think that the purpose of reading is so that they can regurgitate the information. And so if they don't have a system for being able to repeat the information, almost not verbatim, but at least in an outline form or the key ideas, then it's, you know, they shouldn't be engaged in reading. I say, if you can do that, great. Not every book is worthy of that. But again, my primary reason for reading is to stimulate my thinking. I see it like as a conversation with that author or hanging out with somebody that's really smart. Yes, I'll take notes if I can, but if I can't, something about just steeping my mind and my heart in their writing and in their thoughts is going to shape me. It's still going to have an impact on me, even if I can't retain it verbatim. I'm making little micro decisions in the minute about things I'm going to adjust in my life, things I'm going to adjust professionally or in my work, and that is still valuable to me. So don't let that become an impediment, like, oh my gosh, I can't read until I learn how to take copious notes and I learn how to, you know, process these and put them in Evernote or whatever. If you can do that, again, great. I'm not opposed to that. I'm just saying, don't let it become an impediment. I don't think that's a good idea. The next question comes from Brad.
Mike, this is Brad Blackman of Nashville, Tennessee. You can find me online at bradblackman.com. I have a question about reading. Do you ever use post-it notes or any other variety of sticky notes to flag your books so that you can easily refer back to something at a future point? Thank you.
I don't do that, Brad, but I know people that do. I know some people's books are just filled with post-it notes. And if that works for you, great. The great thing about post-it notes is you can remove them without any damage to the book. But I actually want my notes to become a permanent part of the book. So if I'm reading a physical book, I just put them right in the book. But your mileage may vary. Use whatever works. The next question comes from Brent.
Hi, Michael. This is Brent Dumbler from Columbus, Georgia, and I blog at leadwrite.wordpress.com. My question about reading nonfiction is this. I'm on staff at our church, and so it's important to me to continue reading books on leadership and other areas of my ministry. And I have a list of books on my shelf, about 10 books that I'm currently either reading at the same time or they're my to-read list. And it's important to me to get through them, but I feel this constant weight that I'm not reading them at a pace that I should be or need to be. And part of that is because I'm very dyslexic. So that's always been a struggle for me, getting through books and really retaining the material. Do you have any tips or recommendations for someone in my situation to be able to do that? Thanks so much. I really appreciate all you do.
Brent, I don't have any experience with dyslexia, so I'm not sure I can speak to that intelligently. That article that I referred to earlier, How to Retain More of What You Read, might be helpful to you. I would also just release you, brother, from the need to feel like you got to finish everything or you've got to retain everything. Again, I don't think that's the primary value of reading, and others may disagree, but I say get out of it what you can. Reading, even at that level, even if it's superficial, even if you don't feel like you're retaining everything you need to retain, still has value, and it sure beats the alternative of not reading. The next question comes from Christian.
Hi, Michael. My name is Christian F. Monzon, calling from the Lower East Side of New York City. I blog about eternal investments and perfect moments at cfmonzon.com. With so many books on leadership, personal development, marriage, and parenting, I find it very challenging to make time for fiction books. Am I doing myself a disservice by not making more time for fiction books? I would love to hear your thoughts on that. Thank you for all that you do. God bless.
Christian, I think you probably are doing yourself a disservice, but you're in good company because I'm also doing a disservice to myself because I don't read more fiction. I think fiction can be enormously helpful to us. It puts us in a completely different context. It gives us a little escape. It helps us to see the world through new eyes and hopefully refreshes us so that when we come back to our own world, we have some new insights that we can apply to our situation. Right now, I am reading a novel. I'm reading Paulo Coelho's new book, Manuscript Found in Acre. He's probably one of the most popular authors on the planet. He's a Brazilian author who sold millions and millions of copies of his books. I love The Alchemist. I'm having a little bit of a hard time getting into this one, but we'll see where it goes. I'm only about three chapters into it. Gail and I are reading this one aloud in the evenings. We're not doing it every evening, but as we have the opportunity, we're doing it. So I would, contrary to what I practice, I would advise people to read more fiction, particularly if you're a creative person or expected to put out creative content. The next question comes from Christopher.
Hi, Michael. My name is Christopher Scott. I blog at ChristopherScottBlog.com, and I'm a current student at Dallas Theological Seminary. And my question for you about how to read a nonfiction book is how to read textbooks in college and how to get the most out of them in the shortest amount of time. For example, for me, I have one class in which we have five different textbooks, all 200 or 300 pages in length that we have to work through for the class. So I am curious of any tips you'd have to work through those or get the material in them out as quickly as possible in order to be effective. So thanks for your help and thanks for all that you do.
Christopher, if I were to start my college career again, here's what I would do right on the front end. I would take a speed reading course. I really would. I'd go to one of the Evelyn Wood courses. I had the opportunity in college and I dismissed it, and I shouldn't have. It would have been a fantastic investment. Another thing I would do is I would find the book summaries, the Cliff Notes, those books that summarize the content, not because I'd want to cheat on the content, but they usually have a way of highlighting what's important so that you can remember it later. And then I'd simply apply all the practices that I've recommended here, the highlighting, the note-taking, and all the rest to get through the content. And I'd probably do some version of the net out that I recommended in the post, how to retain more of what you read. I'd probably come up with some process, some workflow process that I would use and I could repeat on the books that I read. Great question, and probably worth further research. The next question comes from Esther.
Hi, Michael. My name is Esther Aspling from Minnesota. I blog over at forthisisthetime.com. My question is, can you recommend a site for reviews or good comments that would help me find better nonfiction? I find myself really not enjoying 75% of the books that I pick up. Thanks.
Esther, this is probably something I should write a whole blog post on, but let me just tell you some of the ways that I filter, because there are about 1.5 million new books published in the U.S. every year alone. That's a lot to wade through. All of us have to use some kind of filter, and here's what I do. I look at the bestseller list for starters, because I think that the cream rises to the top. Not always. Not every bestseller is a great book. You probably read plenty of them where you go, man, I don't see what everybody else is seeing in this. But it's not dissimilar from what you do with movies. If you look at a site like Rotten Tomatoes, and there's a site called Goodreads.com that you can refer to that's helpful. Frankly, I don't use it. I typically use the Amazon reviews. And I don't really look at the 5-star reviews, although the number, the overall rating is important to me. But I'm looking at the 4-star reviews, and I always read the 1-stars and the 2-stars because I want to kind of cut to the chase and find out what was critical. Now, if somebody's just criticizing the person, the author, and it's obvious they haven't read the book, that's not that helpful. I'm not looking for 5-star reviewed books so much as I'm looking for books that have a lot of reviews that a lot of people are reading and has a pretty high rating. Another thing I do too is I listen to what my friends are reading and what people I respect are reading. You know, when somebody at the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast last week talks about a book that they were reading, then I tend to go to that. Like one recommendation I got last week, and it was because the author, Ken Segal, was interviewed about his book, Insanely Simple, and it's all about Apple. I'm eating that book up. It's one of the best books that I've read this year. Of course, I say that about every book, but it's really one of the best books I've read this year, and I'm just eating it up. But again, it's coming highly recommended. It made its way through the LeaderCast staff. You know, they wanted to interview this author because it was so point on to their theme, but also because he had something very, very important to say for all of us who are in business. So those are just a couple of the ways I do it. I hope that's helpful to you. Don't be afraid to stop reading if you don't like a book. If it's not resonating, you know, if it doesn't click, if it's not helpful, put it down and find something else. There's so many books, so little time. The next question comes from Jim.
Hi, Michael. My name is Jim Chandler from Ashburn, Virginia. I'm in the process of relaunching my blog at jimchandleronline.com. My challenge is there's so much that I want to read, and I will start reading a book, but before I get a quarter of the way through that, there's another book that I want to read, and then I start reading that, and then that cycle just repeats over and over, and it seems that I have trouble finishing books. I'm curious what system you use to select and to queue the books that you want to read. Thank you, Michael. You've had a tremendous impact on my life, my leadership, and the teams that I lead. Thanks.
Well, Jim, you've already heard me say in the first part of this episode that it's not necessary to finish every book, so you can relieve yourself of that burden to start with. I'm always reading lots of books at one time. In fact, if you go to michaelhyatt.com/recommended books, you'll see my recommended books by category, and you'll also see in the top category what I'm currently reading. And right now, I've got 5 books going. Some of them I haven't picked up in a couple of weeks. Some of them I'm trying to read a little bit on every day, but I've always got more than one book going. And the system that I used to basically just buy every book that I got recommended to me. Well, that got kind of expensive, and the books started piling up that I hadn't read. So now what I use is I use Amazon's wish list function so that if I'm in a conversation with somebody at a dinner party, let's say, and they give me a recommendation, I put it on my wish list, and then I just periodically review the wish list and see what I actually want to order. So I did that today with the book, and that's just kind of my cue, and that's how I use it. So hopefully that'll be helpful to you. Next question comes from Joshua.
Hi, my name is Joshua Beck, and I blog at joshuabeck.org. And I was just wondering how you decide what books to read. I absolutely love to read, love to learn, and I have a hard time reducing my books to read list to a size that's actually attainable. Thank you for your help.
Joshua, this is a little bit like Esther's question, but let me just add this. There are more books than you can possibly read. I mean, you just kind of have to take that as a given. And I get frustrated sometimes because there's so much I'd love to process. I wished we had a world like The Matrix, you know, where you could just plug a chip into the back of your head and download the book, bam, you'd have all that information. But as it turns out, the process of reading is what you're really after, and that just takes, that's a slow process. I don't know what else to say about it. But I don't get too worried about that. I tend to be very need-driven. Whatever it is that I've got a need for, I'll read, or what catches my interest. I'm not very strategic about my reading. Maybe I should be, but I don't worry about it. I just keep moving. I consume as many books as I can. I'm just always looking for new ideas and stimulated by new ideas. The next question comes from Les.
Hi, Michael. This is Les Kerr in Nashville, Tennessee at leskerr.com. I'm a songwriter and entertainer. I feel that reading books by certain fiction authors inspires me to create, and their success encourages me. However, sometimes I feel like I'm cheating, if you will, on valuable career and motivational content. Is there a happy medium between reading fiction and nonfiction? I appreciate your blog and your podcast. Look forward to hearing your response.
Les, I think the right answer to that is the right balance is whatever serves the outcome that you're trying to create. If fiction stimulates your creativity and is helpful professionally, then by all means, read fiction. If occasionally you need to be motivated or need to get a hold of a business concept that would be helpful to you as a songwriter, then great. Read one of those books too. And maybe you just decide that, look, I'm going to read at least 4 nonfiction books a year, and then I'm going to read everything else is going to be fiction. So I wouldn't get too stuck in some kind of paradigm of ought, you know, what you ought to do, because the right plan for you is the one that serves the outcomes that you're trying to get as a result of reading. Just get clear on those and the strategy will be clear to you as well. The next question comes from Matt.
Hi, Michael. This is Matt McWilliams from mattmcwilliams.com, where I blog about life, leadership, and love. Learn the hard way, of course. My problem has been that I actually read a little too much, and it's like this weird badge of honor that I think I have that I am such the reader, but I found that I end up just reading and moving on to the next one. So my question for you is, how do you thoroughly digest the contents of a book to make sure that you get everything out of it? Thanks a lot, Michael.
As you can see, we've gotten this question quite a bit in this session, and as you can also see, my answer is pretty much the same. Don't undervalue the value of just reading and moving on, because I think there is tremendous value. And could you absorb it at a deeper level? Yes, and I've shared some ways to do that. But you could always go to a deeper level. And so get what you can and keep moving. The most important thing in my view is just to keep reading. I'm kind of like a shark. If I don't move, I die. If I don't keep reading, you know, I'm going to intellectually and spiritually die. So if I can apply it better, great. If I can't, not going to obsess about it. I'm just going to keep moving. And I would recommend that you do as well, Matt. The next question comes from Pete.
Hi, Michael. This is Peter Dallum from Ann Arbor, Michigan. I blog at pdallum.com. And as a pastor who frequently is in the context of training leaders and trying to help people grow in their faith, I have a question about mentoring. You frequently talk about your mentoring group on your podcast, and I'm wondering what your best practices are. What do you do to help people grow? How do you help them to get to the next level in their lives? Thanks for your help, Michael. I look forward to hearing your response.
Okay, this question is a little bit off topic, but I want to take it because I'm going to put it on topic, and that is the primary way that I help other people grow is to give them good books. The second way is I send them or point them to great conferences. Those two things, more than anything else, I believe will change your life. Obviously, if all of us could hire or find a great mentor, that would be fantastic. But if you can't, it doesn't mean that you can't be mentored. It just means you have to search for your mentors inside the covers of a book or at a conference speaking from the stage. So I really give books away a lot. I believe in the power of books. I believe in the power of conferences. That's why I loved so much when I was working at Thomas Nelson, because those were the two businesses we were in. We were in the book publishing business and we were in the live events business. And I believed both of those were transformative to people's lives. And how many times have you thought yourself, you know, you look back over your own life and you think, gosh, I could almost chronicle my life in terms of the books that I read. Those were like the milestones. Those were the change points where something significant shifted in my life. Some book I read, some conference I attended, and at least for me, those were the things that mattered. So it's a great way to mentor is to give books to those people that you're mentoring. The last question comes from Travis.
Hi, Michael. It's Travis Dommert calling from I Run, You Run in Atlanta. On the topic of how to read a nonfiction book, my questions aren't so much, I guess, about how to read it as how to make sure I make the best use of that information and those new insights and not forget. I try to read a book about every month or two, so it's not long before I'm having a hard time remembering the details of a book from 6 months ago. Anyway, recently I was thinking about writing book summaries and then sharing those with clients as just a value-added part of our service, and it prompted a couple of questions. One, are there any copyright issues I should be aware of in putting my thoughts and my notes together and possibly even, you know, quotes and things like that out of someone's book, and then turning around and including that perhaps in a paid service to our customers? Certainly, I'd be citing the book and the author, but I just thought I should ask an expert on that. And then second, I was just curious if you think there's an ideal or sweet spot for the length of an effective book summary. I imagine the shorter the better, but then again, I want to be sure I include enough detail so that it's valuable. Anyway, I appreciate your thoughts. It was great to see you at LeaderCast, and I hope you're well. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Travis, the first thing I would encourage you to do is not to do this project. I mean, you're going to be reinventing the wheel. There are a lot of services out there that do an excellent job that have paid staff writers who do this all day long. They review and summarize books. One of them is Soundview Executive Book Summaries, which I subscribe to, and I've got a link in the show notes if you're interested. Another one that I like even a little bit better that I also subscribe to is Get Abstract Book Summaries. I've got a link in the show notes to that as well. But this is a way where I can get a little more information than I might get in the catalog copy, and I find the books that other leaders are reading and that really show some promise, because they typically only review the books that they think have merit. But I'm not sure the world needs another book summary service. Now, the value of it, if you were going to do it, is it would be your unique perspective. And if you can bring some unique angle to it, great. But I would do a search on Google to make sure you're not reinventing the wheel. If you decide to go forward with this project, you really don't need a publisher's permission unless you're going to be quoting, and I mean direct quoting, more than about 200 words. It depends, but this falls under the fair use, and you can quote an author's work up to about 200 words, and that 200 words is my interpretation. Check with a lawyer if you have really any questions, but that's typically inside the publishing house how we think of fair use, is if somebody wants to cite more than about 200 words, they have to get permission from us, and we have to give them essentially a limited license. But if it's shorter than that, we don't worry about it because we know it's going to promote the work. So I hope that that is helpful. So let me just turn the tables now and ask you, listening to this podcast, this question. How do you read nonfiction books? I'd really like to hear from you. What are your best practices? What have you learned over the years? And to comment on this episode, you can go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com /055 as in episode 55. Couple of quick announcements. If you're considering launching your own platform, you need to start with a self-hosted WordPress blog. That's my platform of choice. It's not as complicated to set up as it sounds. In fact, I've put together a step-by-step screencast on exactly how to do it. You don't need any technical knowledge. I walk you through the entire process in exactly 20 minutes. And the screencast is absolutely free. You can find it at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. There's a link in the show notes. And by the way, I also include a special discount code just for my podcast listeners and blog readers, but it will enable you to get a hosting account through Bluehost for just $3.95 a month. So not only is it easy, it's cheap. Second announcement, registration is now open for the launch conference, September 16 through 19 at the beautiful Sebastian Hotel in Vail, Colorado. I cannot wait. Whether you're a professional speaker or just want to be, this conference will teach you how to start where you are and take your speaking business to the next level. We also explain how to make more money speaking. And specifically, Ken Davis, my partner, and I teach you a powerful four-part framework that enables you to, number one, discover your assets, number two, design your products, number three, develop your market, and number four, determine your value. How do you charge when you speak? Well, this is the conference that launched me into my professional speaking career, and I found it so incredibly helpful that I became a business partner with Ken, who is the founder of Launch, and you can find out more about the conference at launchconference.tv. Again, there's a link in the show notes, but you can register now and get in on the early bird discount, which will be expiring soon. Finally, third announcement, my next podcast will be on the topic of who are your trusted advisors? I want to share with you how I almost met with total financial ruin, all because I acted as a Lone Ranger and didn't get a second opinion. You won't believe the story. But if you've got a question about this topic, please leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or website because I'll link to it in the show notes just as I did with the callers in this episode. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be grateful if you'd rate my podcast on iTunes. If you've already done that, thank you very much. If you've not, it just takes a few minutes. If you'd like to comment in this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com, go to the show notes for this episode, and scroll down to the comment section and tell me whatever you want to tell me. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.